So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government instead of from those who would take away our freedom. If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, there is no freedom.
They'll never take our freedom!
Freedom?
Hello everyone and welcome to Freedom Rings. This is Tommy Freedom broadcasting to you loud and clear on the TFR radio network from a cabin high atop a mountain ridge somewhere in Appalachia. I'll be your voice of reason for the next 30 minutes, so keep it right here. Everybody, and welcome back to Freedom Rings. Now, we've just recently experienced the 4th of July, which is an awesome holiday. It is one of my favorite holidays. And I know we were supposed to get into Nevada, getting back on the Off the Beaten Path series, but a couple things have happened over the past week. And I was initially just going to cover them and get into Nevada because there really is not a whole lot to discuss about Nevada. But now so much stuff has come in that I've just got to cover it and bounce Nevada back. So, yeah, George, I know your paw's on the button. Go ahead and run it. Sometimes, George, I really wish I had never bought you that stupid recorder. No, I would not have rather gotten you the accordion. Why couldn't you have learned how to play something cool like the electric guitar? Either way, it's irrelevant. So let's get back to the meat and potatoes of the show here and what brought this about, why I am not going to be speaking about Nevada. After last week's show, I was contacted by a listener by the name of Mike, who emailed me and brought up something that I had mentioned dealing with Japan. I made the statement that Japan did not have a military. Now, I left out a key word there. I had, for all intents and purposes, fully intended to say that Japan did not have a standing military. However, I omitted that word, and that changed the context entirely. And Mike contacted me and sent me a link to Wikipedia that goes over in great detail what Japan does have currently in the form of a military. And let me just run through this real quick with you because I want you to understand the difference so that what I said last week actually makes sense. And once again, Mike, thank you very much for contacting me and bringing this up and pointing this out. Folks, anytime that I am wrong or I've made a mistake or something and you bring it to my attention, I will fully admit that there is egg on my face, and I will bring it back. I will admit my mistake. Although this time, both Mike and myself are both correct, so neither one of us has to do any face washing here. But let me bring up what was pointed out to me via this link. Okay, so there are three paragraphs that I want to read to you from this Wikipedia article. Three or four. Deprived of any military capability after 1945, Japan had only the U.S. occupational forces and a minor domestic police force on which to rely for security. Rising Cold War tensions in Europe and Asia, coupled with leftist-inspired strikes and demonstrations in Japan, prompted some conservative leaders to question the unilateral renunciation of all military capabilities. These sentiments were intensified in 1950 as occupation troops began to be moved to the Korean War theater. This left Japan virtually defenseless and vulnerable, and very much aware of the need to enter into a mutual defense relationship with the United States to guarantee the nation's external security. Encouraged by the American occupation authorities, the Japanese government in July 1950 authorized the establishment of a national police reserve consisting of 75,000 men equipped with light infantry weapons. Under the terms of the Treaty of Mutual Cooperation and Security between the United States and Japan, United States forces stationed in Japan were to deal with external aggression against Japan, while Japanese forces, both ground and maritime, would deal with internal threats and natural disasters. Accordingly, in mid-1952, the National Police Reserve was expanded to 110,000 men and named the National Safety Forces. The Coastal Safety Force, which had been organized in 1950 as a waterborne counterpart to the National Police Reserve, was transferred with it to the National Safety Agency to constitute an embryonic navy. On July 1, 1954, the National Security Board was reorganized as the Defense Agency, and the National Security Force was reorganized afterwards as the Japan Ground Self-Defense Force, which was a de facto post-war Japanese army. Again, Self-Defense Force. The Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force and Japan Air Self-Defense Force. Again, this is all internal. This is self-defense. This is not aggressive. And let's see here. That's the end of that one. The Far East Air Force, which was the U.S. Air Force, announced on January 6, 1955, that 85 aircraft would be turned over to the fledgling Japanese Air Force on about the 15th of January. This is the first equipment in the new force. Okay, so that's the end of that part. I don't need to read anything else here. What this does is just, let me just scroll down here because it gives these three things. Bear with me. The Japan Ground Self-Defense Force, which was their army, the Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force, Navy, and the Japan Air Self-Defense Force of an Air Force. Again, these were all to deal with internal disputes, not external. Japan still does not have a standing military that is capable of aggressive moves. So, Mike, you were correct, because I forgot to say the word standing. You were correct that they do have a military of sorts, but it is a self-defense military only. It is, for all intents and purposes, a giant police department that has a navy, an army, and an air force. It's really no different than having, say, NYPD with planes and helicopters and ships and that sort of a thing. So thank you once again for bringing that to my attention, because, again, it was my fault for not saying the word standing, which made a huge difference in there. But we are the standing military force in the country of Japan. We are the only ones with actual troops, with tanks, and with big guns, and with planes that have really big bombs on them that we can actually launch an attack against an aggressor. Now, Japan can defend itself against an aggressor, but they do not have the authority to launch a preemptive strike against North Korea. That's the big difference here. We do. And when our troops are being threatened by the Norks, we, as the United States of America, do have a duty to protect Japan as well as our own people and launch a preemptive strike against North Korea. So I hope that clears that up. Mike, once again, thank you, my friend, my brother, for contacting me. I am always up for being corrected if I have made a mistake. And again, this is one of those few times where we're both correct. So once again, kudos for bringing that to my attention. And thank you so much for listening to the show. I really do appreciate it. Okay, now that that's over and done with, let's get back to the 4th of July. Like I said, that's one of my favorite holidays. Now, it's one of my favorite holidays because it's very, very patriotic. That is the birth of our nation. It's the celebration of the birth of our nation. But let's face it, folks. It's also a lot of fun because we shoot off fireworks. Now, we do this at New Year's as well. 4th of July and New Year's here in the South, at least in the great state of North Carolina, they involve fireworks and gunfire and, well, anything pretty much that explodes or makes a big noise, a big bang, we do this. And on New Year's Eve, when the ball drops, we go outside, it literally sounds like a war zone for about 45 minutes. It is just incredible. The fireworks that are going off, the gunshots, of course, it's all in city limits, too. It is just, it is awesome. So the 4th of July, again, I love this because, of course, we get to shoot off fireworks. But again, it also celebrates the birth of our nation. So it's kind of the best of both worlds here. You shoot off fireworks, you shoot off guns, you celebrate the fact that we're free. But invariably, there are some things in North Carolina that are legal to shoot for fireworks and some that are not. Now, North Carolina, until about maybe 25 years ago, all fireworks were illegal here. Then they passed a law that said that we could have fireworks here in North Carolina, provided they did not either, number one, explode or fly into the air, which is pretty much the good stuff. You know, you want the mortar shells, you want the bottle rockets, the sky rockets. So here, fountains and sparklers and things like that are legal, but hell, everybody just goes down to South Carolina and gets the really good stuff. And in all honesty, there is no place for the cops to confiscate these fireworks and hold them. So what this brings about is a couple of times over the years, when I have actually had some interactions with the police officers here locally involving fireworks, some when they were legal, some when they were not. And I think actually all of them, even if they were legal or not, everything that I had was completely illegal at the time. But the first one is, and this was actually classic, folks. I had some bottle rockets, which have actually been banned in South Carolina as well. These are some I picked up in Tennessee years and years and years ago. And this was back in the 1990s. And I had a bottle on the patio behind the garage, and I was putting these things on crazy angles and just shooting them over the neighbors' houses and just detonating them over the neighbors' houses. And I had one, and I had it to go over my garage and detonate over a house across the street. Well, I lit the fuse and it slipped and it went directly over the garage and down the driveway about 6 or 7 feet off the ground. As soon as the thing launched, I saw a cruiser coming down the road doing just a neighborhood check. And this bottle rocket went down the driveway, went out into the street, and exploded about 20 feet in front of the car. And of course, I knew I was busted. So I had a handful of bottle rockets, and I immediately heard gravel crunching as he turned into my driveway. So I went down, I met him, I said, "Yep, dude, I'm busted, you got me." I said, you got me. He said, well, how many more of these things do you have? And I had like maybe 5 or 6 left in my hand. I said, this is it. And he said, well, I'm not even going to take them from you. He said, we don't have any place to store these things, in all honesty with you. We're just not equipped to do that. Just wait until it gets dark and then light them off. Of course, I didn't tell him about the whole big box I had in the back hall. But that was my first experience with the police in lighting off illegal fireworks. And again, it was absolutely funny. Can you imagine driving down the road as a cop and all of a sudden a bottle rocket comes screaming out of a driveway 20 feet in front of you and goes off? I mean, it's classic. So that was the first time that I experienced dealing with the police and fireworks. The second time was on a New Year's Eve, and my next door neighbor came over. He was underage. He brought a bottle of wine with him, and he's chugging the wine, and we're lighting off fireworks. And I had these things called bird bombs or bird busters. They're actually, you can't get them anymore because of the Clinton Chinese ammo ban. But I used to be able to get these things, 25 of these shells for like $5 or something. It was stupid cheap. And basically what it was a 12-gauge shotgun shell that fired a real M80 into the air. And it was made for scaring away birds. And in 1999, of course, remember, Party Legacy 1999, that was the big one. My next door neighbor came over. Like I said, he had a bottle of wine. And, you know, we're consuming the wine and we're lighting off fireworks. And I'm chambering these 12-gauge bird bombs and firing them up in the air. And for some reason, we took a break. And I put the shotgun under the front porch against the side of the house. And we were standing there. And all of a sudden, 2 marked cruisers pulled up in front of the house. And these 2 cops get out and they come up and they say, hey, how you doing? I said, good. You know, what's up? He said, not a whole lot. You know, we're just wondering, you know, have you been shooting off fireworks, detonating any fireworks, you know, shooting off firearms, anything like that? Well, of course we had. And I'm figuring, well, you know, maybe one of the neighbors called in. I said, no, not coming out of this yard. So the 2 of them come up, and thank God they didn't walk around the bush to see all the spent shell casings laying on the ground, or we would have been busted. And of course, my next door neighbor is trying to blend into the bricks on the front of my house. You know, he'd already ditched the wine bottle. He's just absolutely scared to death. One of the cops says, you got a fiance? And I said, yes. Gave her a name and her badge number. And he goes, yeah, she just wants us to come by and say hello and see what you were doing. And I said, you beep, beep, beep. I said, yeah, come on, y'all, all right. You know, we all shook hands and everything, and they left. Well, in actuality, we had been lighting off fireworks and discharging firearms and everything that everybody else does here. But apparently, as the story came about a few days later, they were bored. They had nothing to do. There were no calls coming in. And they decided to stop by my house and prank me. Probably the best prank that's ever been pulled on me. My third experience with the police and fireworks was when I was actually running for public office. And I was attending a pool party at the house next door. The underage guy had since grown up, and they were hosting a pool party, and we all pooled our fireworks, and somebody had gotten one of those huge belts of firecrackers that was like literally 100 feet long, and that was going off, and we're lighting all kinds of stuff, and there was a neighbor from one street over that would come and watch us light off our fireworks every year, and once we got done, he would then call the cops on us. He enjoyed the show, then he'd call the cops, and this happened. And a unit pulled up, and a female officer got out and said, have you all been lighting off fireworks? Well, of course. I mean, the road was just littered with firecracker paper and mortar shells and everything like that. So, of course, we were busted. Now, I was running for public office at the time, so I'm doing my best not to stand out here. And thank God she didn't recognize me. And she said, I'll tell you what, if you clean all this stuff up, I won't issue any citations. So we all got out there. And for the next 30 minutes, we were sweeping and raking and stuffing all kinds of junk and garbage bags and got out of that. But that's been my experience with the police department and illegal fireworks. I know I'm way, way over here on time for a break, and I'll be back in a couple of minutes with my follow-up.
From now, my kids will be outnumbered. Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Gay Pride Days, school assemblies, posters on the wall. It's in our face every day. What's a white Christian teen to do? And does anyone really care? Listen each week to White Youth Focus, where teens discuss the propaganda war against them. Moderated by caring and thoughtful white Christian activists, Billy and Charity. Because it's okay to be white and proud.
The further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those that speak it. Get your truth at Radio New America with your host, Billy Roper, at KKKRadio.com.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here for Freedom Rings. I invite you to tune in every week and listen to my show, Freedom Rings, and hear what I, Tommy Freedom, have to say. It's usually pretty interesting and quite informative. It may have something to do with freedom, it may have something to do with liberty. It may be downright funny, but it will always be informative. So be sure and tune in each week to listen to me, Tommy Freedom, here on my show at Freedom Rings, broadcasting to you loud and clear on KKK Radio. So I went way over when I should have gone to take that break, so we don't have that much time left. There were a couple other things I wanted to talk to you about. One deals with high-capacity magazines in the state of California, and a really, really interesting case out of Michigan dealing with Fourth Amendment violations. I'm not going to have a chance to get into those today. It's just going to take way, way too long. So I think I will come back next week and cover those, and I'm sure there'll be something else interesting that's happened in the meantime. So once again, poor Nevada gets bounced back for another week. So in the few minutes that are remaining, of course, we were talking about fireworks and cool stories involving the cops with fireworks before the break. But I think one of the coolest things that I've ever done involving fireworks was combining model rocketry with fireworks. Now, if you've never thought about this or experienced it, then plug your ears. But when I was a kid, I was very, very much into learning about rocketry and fireworks and firearms. And in fact, the very first firearm that I ever made, it was black powder, sort of. It was a piece of, I guess it was gas pipe that had a half-inch diameter interior. And I found a piece of this stuff and a thread-on cap to go on one end. And I drilled a very small hole in the back end of that to where you could fit the fuse from a firecracker in there. And then I would put a 50 caliber lead ball down the barrel, light this thing and hold it. And I had, for all intents and purposes, you know, a basic black powder firearm. And it would blow that lead ball, my goodness, at least 250 feet. It was incredible. For a 14-year-old to start experimenting with something like that, it was pretty cool. So then I got into building model rockets. And of course, I had to figure a way to incorporate fireworks into model rocketry. So the very first thing I did was to take a very small, I think it was like a double A or triple A, I'm not sure, the really small rocket engine, and put a set of fins on it from a firework that had the fins on it. Just I refitted everything. And I put three little firecrackers in the top and put some paper over the top of this thing, put a fuse in it, and lit it. And it was incredible. This thing was basically just a model rocket engine with fins on it. No weight whatsoever. And it must have gone up 1,500 feet. And then way up in the air, you heard poof, poof, poof as the firecrackers exploded. It was incredible. And then I got the idea to take these model rocket engines and tape them to dowels. And I was basically making my own sky rockets using like size B and C and even D model rocket engines. These things were going thousands of feet in the air. And of course, they always had firecrackers in there. And one year, I think I was 14 years old, I hosted the family reunion cookout. And I had been building model rockets all winter long, and they all had fireworks in the nose cones, because when the ejection charge goes off to set off the parachute, it flares. And if you have fireworks in there, it will light the wick. This stuff works every time. I think I had like 14 or 15 rockets put together, but the piece de resistance was a scale model of a Phoenix missile. This thing was 3 feet long, and it had a huge nose cone in it. And I built this thing, and it was beautiful. And I got a D size engine, and the idea was that this thing would go up using the D engine. The engine would burn out, it would continue to coast, because I got it with, I think, a 10 second delay. Dumb. Well, things did not go as you would think that they would. All the other rockets went off without any fanfare. They were all really cool. Pyrotechnics in there, you know, some had little fizzy things that would go off, and smoke bombs, and just really cool stuff. Well, I had loaded this Phoenix missile with firecrackers and smoke bombs and just everything I could cram in there, and I just added all kinds of weight to this thing. Again, the idea was for it to go up, hit its maximum height, and continue to coast, and then go off. So this was like thousands of feet up in the air. Very spectacular. Unfortunately, the laws of physics do not work with what looks like a really good plan inside of your head. I lit this thing, it went up about 20 feet in the air, turned over, came back down, and stuck into the ground. We all forgot about the delayed ejection charge. We all start walking towards this thing, and all of a sudden there was this huge explosion. The nose cone stayed in the ground. The entire rocket blew about 12 or 13 feet into the air. All the smoke bombs came off. All the firecrackers started going off. The big charges all went off. And it was just incredible, because nobody was expecting for this to happen. So I guess that's my story involving model rocketry and fireworks, which, once again, folks, I encourage you not to try this at home. But that's my story, and I am sticking to it. And George is telling me that I'm coming up out of time here. So, as always, if you want to get in touch with me, you may do so at TommyFreedomRings@yahoo.com. Until next week, my friends, you take care. Out for now.